In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
There's a saying I'm sure you know. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And along those lines, those who do not learn from Oregon are doomed to repeat its mistakes. Our state forest management policies often lead to more forest fires, which is stupid because all we need to do is do something. Open the forest up and let timber companies go loose. Harvest those areas that are especially prone to forest fires. And the best part is the government makes money twice. They get a payment from the sale of timber, plus they get all those taxes from good-paying jobs and companies making profits. But the government would rather not do that. Logging sounds an awful lot like hard work, so they would rather spend money on putting out forest fires than making money doing things that would prevent the problem in the first place. Oregon is pretty much setting its healthcare system on fire. And once again, it's a problem they caused, and then they set it on fire. What's especially bothersome is that Oregon is where it's at after telling people how much money would be saved if the government took over healthcare. To quote John Candy, "And if they told you Wolverines made good house pets, would you believe them?" Unlike forest fires, whose smoke clog our skies and are pretty hard to miss, especially when it lights your house on fire, but what happens in healthcare is hard to see. Even the money, the tremendous amounts of money, is hard to see because so much of it happens outside the view of the public. What too many of the public sees is free healthcare. It doesn't cost anything. It's amazing. But it's not free. It can never be free unless all those who work in healthcare work for free. Doctors, nurses, assistants, and if all that equipment is free, and the people building hospitals work for free, and so on and so forth. There is absolutely nothing in healthcare that is free. It is trillions of dollars of taxes paid for by someone, including you, even if you don't know it. I'd like to welcome Lisa Lettmeyer back to the show. She is our go-to expert when we want some common sense answers to the craziness of what we've done to our healthcare. She's also the owner of HealthSource Northwest, a company that helps individuals find the best insurance or Medicare plans for them. Lisa, it's great to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for having me back. I always enjoy talking with you and going over the numbers and the craziness that we have here in Oregon. And I do really quickly want to say thank you for what you do. I think it's vitally important that we bring information and facts to our Oregonians so that they can understand what's happening with their tax dollars.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, we've been talking to you pretty much since the beginning of Kitzhaber's healthcare transformation. This is Oregon's push for socialized medicine and single payer. They made no bones about that. It said it right there in the legislation that inaugurated all of that. For those who haven't heard you, though, or to remind those who have, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do exactly.
Well, so actually, as of February, I celebrated 20 years of having my health and life insurance license in the state of Oregon. I left my first career that I had kind of grown into, which by the time I left, I was a corporate-level accountant for a development firm in the Portland area. So I'm kind of a numbers geek. I was doing performas and forecasts and financials and budgets, and so that's just how my brain's wired. I left that and went in and got my insurance and securities license in 2003 and started off on that path. And by 2004, with the help of the other partners, we bought an existing health insurance agency. And from that point, my focus was just health insurance. And then within the next year or two, I added Medicare. So I dropped the securities. By 07, I took over the agency 100%, and so I'm the main owner, the main agent, but I have two other agents working with me, one of which is my husband, and our focus primarily is just, what I focus on is Medicare. My other staff focus on helping people with the individual health market, whether it's direct to a carrier or through the exchange. And yeah, you and I and Carla met back, I think it was 1999, because that's when they were really pushing to, Oregon wanted to create their own system here, and quite frankly, eliminate the insurance agent. They felt that we were not needed. So that was fascinating. And so I was at the Capitol actually testifying. I think that's how we met. And then we saw from there just the push for the Affordable Care Act that kind of superseded what Oregon did. And then we ended up with these exchanges. And again, the feds along the way, the states have always, you know, felt that they didn't need agents, but yet they're paying a lot of money to facilitators and community organizer people. So there's still money going out, even at the federal and state level, to, you know, put a human with a pulse in there to help answer questions. However, as an agent, I'm licensed. I carry insurance that if I mess up, you know, if somebody were to sue me, that's a big difference from that versus a community partner or a volunteer.
Right. So, you know,
it's been an interesting ride.
That's for sure. You know, there's just been so many changes over the years that you mentioning that they wanted to get rid of the insurance agents. I'd kind of forgotten that, but you're right, is that they effectively want to replace you guys with government workers. And of course, then you've lost that mindset coming at things from the private industry side of things. And they said you've got a whole bunch of people now that you've added to the government roles, which is, of course, going to increase expenses just exponentially, because now you got to add in all those PERS payments. You guys don't get PERS as an individual private insurer.
No. Yeah. And that's just it. What people don't remember is, as an insurance agent, I'm a 1099, right? All my money comes in. I only make money from commissions that I have to earn and keep my client base. I pay everything. I pay my overhead. If I do any advertising, all that comes out of my pocket. And we can, a little bit later, talk about some numbers I found on what the state is spending on the, you know, the helpers and the exchange system here. But when we first saw this go through, the carriers kind of jumped on board and said, hey, we can save those commissions. We pay agents, which, by the way, wasn't much or isn't much. And what they found out is that it's not the case. Still, and all through this, the majority of enrollments are coming through the use of somebody working with an agent, either on or off the exchange, or in my Medicare world, 70 to 80% of their enrollments come from agents. So they've tried to eliminate us, but at the end of the day, somebody, you know, the consumer wants to find somebody that they're comfortable with, that they've chosen, who's licensed, who has experience, and they don't want to talk to whoever's sitting at a customer service line who's never going to call them back.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I remember when we were first studying all of this, that was some of the numbers that I had run individually, is I had looked at, okay, so what are the costs if we have all of these navigators and everybody else, because that was part of it too, part of the transformation, is they're going to have all of these essentially roadblocks between you and an actual doctor, and the navigators and all that were all part of that. And so I looked at, okay, so if we have somebody at, and I forget the exact dollar figure that I used, I think it was maybe $25 an hour type thing, and then run that out for 20 years and then add another 20 years of PERS beyond that, it was actually more expensive to the state to hire that person than if they just simply hired a private doctor who, as you said, is going to handle all of their own expenses and everything else. So it's crazy what the government has done. All right, everyone stay with us. We're going to have lots more with Lisa Lettmeyer talking about the problems within the healthcare industry. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about healthcare and what Oregon has done to its healthcare system. It's not good. And so we're talking to Lisa Lettmeyer. Excuse me. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest, an independent insurance agency, and she specializes in navigating the complexities of the healthcare insurance market for individuals and families. You can find out about all of that at healthsourcenw.com. And Lisa, during the break, we were talking numbers. Since going on that last segment, I had mentioned the money involved with the state hiring all these non-medical people in the healthcare system, the navigators and such. But you mentioned how you have recently been digging into the numbers on your own, especially with Oregon's healthcare portal, the marketplace, and how much we're spending on that with so little return on it. So why don't you share what you found with our audience?
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't perused the entire report, but you can Google this report. It's produced every year. So this is the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace 2022 Annual Report. So, you know, Oregon, originally, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, Oregon was one of the states that wanted to set up their own state-based exchange. We were going to call it Cover Oregon. We were awarded, I don't even know how much money, a lot of money, to set up our website, to set up the offices for the people that would be sitting there, to help pay, you know, community helpers and stuff to help people, facilitate people to go through this Cover Oregon. One of the reasons it failed is the state tried to do too much. They tried to make it more than just applying for Medicaid or subsidies. They tried to make it everything, WIC and all the other programs. So it failed. It was actually the reason, quite frankly, that Kitzhaber was run out of office right after he was newly elected, because he allowed his campaign people to basically be telling the groups that were creating the website what to do. And when it wasn't working, it just became this whole fiasco. But that's why Kitzhaber was ran out. So CoverOregon failed miserably. All of that money, and it's not free money, folks. When they say it's free money because they're getting it from the feds, I don't know about you, but I pay federal taxes. So all of that money was for nothing. I'm actually located next door to the building that had been the headquarters for CoverOregon. The entire top floor, they had done a whole, you know, revamp of the floor and spent all this money. Just on that one thing was about $400,000, and they lasted for a year. And then it sat empty for a couple of years before they moved in the, I think it's OSHA who's over there now. But the point is, we're spending a lot of money towards programs that don't necessarily work. So Oregon never created their own exchange because it failed. So we plug into the federal exchange. Now the feds charge us a little bit of a rate because they're running this massive website so that our people can access these subsidies or qualify for Medicaid. But we still have an agency here. So the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace, there we kind of have our own landing page here in Oregon that then directs people as they go to enroll into the federal exchange. But I was just curious, so I pulled up the report, and apparently, according to the report that I'm reading, for 2022, combined with things like personal services and employee travel, employee training, office expense, telecommunication, publicity and publications, professional services, legal fees, you just name all of it, distributions for grantees, special payments to the DCBS, which is our division for business and insurance, all told, they spent almost $6.4 million last year. And that's just to be really kind of a go-between between the consumer and the federal exchange that's already there. So that's a lot of money. And do you know what they showed on this report for all of that?
I'm afraid to
they
ask.
Have, yeah, a total of, you'd be kind of curious, well, geez, how many people out of the 4.2 million that we have here in Oregon, that's how many residents we have is 4.2, how many enrolled during that time frame for the marketplace, or you know, either re-enrolled or newly enrolled. So we have a total of 142,000 people on the exchange as of the end of 2022.
Wow.
So that, call that the 2023 enrollment cycle. Of that, 32,000, almost 33,000 just automatically re-enrolled. They didn't do anything. There was only 26, almost 27,000 new consumers, and then there was 82,000 active re-enrollees, meaning that they're on the exchange and they actively went and looked at plans and maybe made some adjustments. So for all that money they spent, they only gathered not quite 27,000 new people onto the exchange.
Whoa. That's
so
astounding.
I love things like that. Again, I guess maybe because my background's in accounting, I find these numbers fascinating.
Well, 6.4 million to get 142,000 people on there, allegedly. I mean, that's a poultry
amount. Most of which were already there.
Yeah, exactly. Any, most of them are already there.
Most of which were already there anyway.
Yeah.
And if we want to take that even further, so here's again what I think that your listeners need to understand. I'm not opposed to the premium subsidies that were set up in the Affordable Care Act. I am opposed to how they're granted out. The only thing that's asked during your enrollment process of whether you qualify for Medicaid or premium subsidies, tax credits, is what your projected or estimated current current month's income and your income for the following year. So if we're doing a enrollment in the fall of 2022, we're asking the consumer, what do you think you're going to make for your family, your entire family who's on the tax return, what are you going to make next year? Notice there's no questions about what your assets are. How much do you have in a 401k or savings? Are you living, you know, with one house and a second house or a vacation home? None of that's asked.
Mm.
So I will assure you that there are people that are doing quite well that still qualify for tax subsidies because there's no asset test. So that's one problem. Secondly, as these subsidies are handed out, we, as not just Oregonians but Americans, need to be asking, how much is this costing? So for those 142,000 people that I was telling you about that qualified for subsidies or are on the marketplace, I should say, let me clarify, 142,000 people went through the marketplace in Oregon. Of them, about 113,000 received tax credit of some form. The average tax credit that they received was $503 a month. That's going towards their premium. So you times that by, you know, 103, 113,422,000 people. That's, 57 million dollars a month. So that's the average tax premium, which brought the average actual out-of-their-pocket premium for those consumers down to about 224. However, of the 113,000 people that are receiving tax credits, almost 21,000 of them are on a plan that they are paying $10 or less a month for. Mm. So all of those premium dollars don't get wiped away. They have to be paid to the carrier. So every dollar of a premium tax credit is money coming from the federal government. And when you look at the spending of our general fund and you look at how much we're spending on Medicaid and the portions of Medicare, not all of it, Part A is its own trust account, but you're looking at, you know, Part B and Part D, and then you're adding in these subsidies. When people truly plug in and pay attention, our spending in this country is out of control.
Oh, absolutely.
And the projections you can't even fathom. We will run our country into the ground. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't help people that need help, but I am saying we better get really good about defining the rules around helping people and how to help them off of assistance. Mm-hmm. It was never meant to be put somebody on to a support program and leave them there indefinitely, or coach them to stay there indefinitely.
Yeah,
that's our problem.
Yeah, the spending, as you say, is just completely out of control. And of course, we just took in 4 million new illegal immigrants, and that, of course, isn't going to help either. All right, let's go and take a break. We'll have lots more with Lisa Lettmeyer after this. Well, my head hurts. We were talking during the break there with Lisa Lettmeyer about some of these numbers here and some of the damage that the government is doing to our healthcare system, and it's just mind-boggling. And Lisa is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. That's an independent insurance agency. You can find out more by heading to healthsourcenw.com if you're looking for help getting on the right plan for you. And Lisa, just to kind of go back to some of the things that we were talking about during the break there, you were talking about that report that showed, with all of the money that Oregon has spent on that, essentially the landing page, the Oregon Health Exchange, and I did look that up. We spent $300 million trying to get that going, and it failed. $300 million. And I think the grant was actually larger than that, because remember, we stopped work on it when it was pretty clear that it wasn't going to work. And that's just the web page. It's just mind-boggling that we spent that much money on just a web page. And then you were looking at this in terms of the tax credits that's out there of the 142,000, 113,000 and change. We're getting these tax credits. It amounts to $57 million per month that we are doling out, and so $685 million for the year. But we're also talking about the Medicaid expansion within all of that, and I think that is such a huge issue. So talk to our audience about what happened there.
Yeah. So I think it's just, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of history. So the Oregon history of Medicaid is kind of interesting in and of itself. It was back in 1994 that Oregon decided to extend Medicaid to people that were at the poverty level. They had budgeting issues pretty quickly, so that was what happened is people that were on it, they started getting less services. And then I believe, I wrote it down someplace, I think it was from like 2004 to 2008, they basically effectively stopped adding anybody new because they couldn't afford it. I don't know if you remember during Kitzhaber's time, he kind of took all the list of medical services and then prioritized them. Mm-hmm. And depending on the number that your medical service fell, it was either covered or not covered, right? So, you know, there were some cancer treatments that fell below the line, but things that were above the line were, you know, drug and alcohol treatment. So it was kind of an interesting deal.
Well, it was sort of the whole death panel. He had started down that road, and a lot of people sort of react to that, and so he kind of backtracked on that, as I recall. But it was ghoulish.
Yeah. They labeled every medical service, and then they determined each year how much they could afford to pay down to. So if there were 600 services, could they go to 350, right? And if yours wasn't in that 350, you didn't get that service. But anyway, that's what was happening. So here comes the Affordable Care Act. And effectively, because we were one of the states that expanded Medicaid, effectively as of January 2014, anybody, again, who was at or below 138% of the poverty mark was put onto Medicaid. And that was a big increase to the Oregon budget. And what the feds told all of the states is, hey, if you'll do this, we're going to pay the full price of that additional cost to your state through 2016. However, after 2016, we're going to need you to start picking up some of the cost. So they kind of phased this in over several years. So where we're at theoretically now is that for all of those states that have expanded Medicaid and took on that additional cost, the feds are still covering 90% of it, but the states had to, you know, eventually handle the 10% increase on top of what they were paying, which is why there are 10 states that chose not to do it. They didn't know how to budget and handle that extra cost. So that's the history of it. Then we get to COVID, and, you know, Oregon, quite frankly, was one of the worst on a lockdown state and for the longest amount of time. And so the feds immediately said nationwide, if you're on Medicaid right now as in 2021, we're no longer going to certify every year. We're just going to leave you alone through effectively March 31st of this year. So normally a Medicaid recipient is recertified on their finances or their income every year, which makes sense. You don't just put somebody on a program and don't check back. But the Fed stopped the recertification process through March of this year. So what's happening now is they're going through this disenrollment phase, or this wind down. We actually increased our Medicaid numbers here in Oregon by 33% from the beginning of COVID until where we're at now. We've got 36% of our state, effectively 1.5 million people on Medicaid. So they're panicked because they're trying to move these people off or recertify them. A lot of them, they don't have an address. There's all kinds of issues that come up with that. So Oregon's giving people from the 1st of April through the end of July to respond to get recertified. Now, because we've gotten kind of a special waiver, because we're ultimately going to talk about this new health plan that they're trying to create. So in the meantime, for the next year, if you're at or below 200% of the poverty mark and you were on Medicaid before COVID or any time during COVID, you're going to remain on Medicaid. So they're expanding that out from 138% up to 200% of the poverty mark. They're also not going to recertify those people until every 2 years. So instead of every 1 year, it's now going to be every 2 years. The state says, well, we're going to lose a bunch of people. You know, effectively, they think a big chunk of those people should come off Medicaid. They should, right? Their income is different. Life is different. But Oregon doesn't want that. They want to maintain those numbers. So again, what they've done is asked the feds for a waiver, which allows them to keep people on Medicaid up through 200% of the poverty mark. They are not going to recert for, instead of every year, it'll be 2 years. And then the idea is they're going to get to next year where they're going to create a whole brand new program in our state called the basic health program. And that will cover people at 100%, no premiums, no out-of-pockets, up through 200% of the poverty mark. It's going to be different than Medicaid somehow. You'll still have your Medicaid people, then you'll have your basic health people. The problem with that is, number one, they're basically pulling money from the subsidized people that are getting subsidies by insurance plans into this program. That disrupts that market. They're creating a whole new program, which Oregon is not good at doing. Again, you just mentioned the $300 million alone for the website that they failed on, not counting all the other money they spent and didn't get off the ground. And we can talk about all kinds of programs, the DMV, everything else. So you've got all this happening where they're spending all this, additional money to keep people in this fully covered Medicaid situation, when in fact, if we allowed the normal course of the Affordable Care Act to run through, for those folks who are technically above the 130% of the poverty mark, they would go through the exchange. And again, we go technically through the federal exchange. And they put in their income, and the exchange looks at it and does a big complicated formulation and calculation and says, well, depending on where you are on that poverty scale, are you at 140%, 150, 200, whatever the case is, they have adjusted it so that you pay a small percentage of your income towards your premium. So what's happening is the federal government gives you what we call a premium subsidy. So they literally are paying your or helping to pay your health insurance premium every month to the carrier. So you might pay a little piece or half, and the government's paying the rest, or you don't take it till the end of the year and it's a tax credit. Bottom line, it's federal dollars. It's cash from the federal government coming too.
And that's that's money that we all are paying into, or they're just printing more of it. Okay, lots more to talk about. At least let my everyone stay with us. And welcome back. Talking to Lisa Lettmeyer. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest, an independent insurance agency. And you can find out more at healthsourcenw.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page, which is 13-30. There's going to be lots of information for you, including an article that we're going to get to here in just a bit. We've been talking about the extraordinary amount of numbers. I mean, it's just mind-boggling, really, to hear how much we're spending on things. It is no wonder we are $32 trillion in debt and climbing, and not to mention the $100 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities. I mean, we're just, it's just whatever problem there is, we've got plenty of government money. We'll just throw more at it. It's just astounding. So, Lisa, you've mentioned a couple times about this new plan, and this was highlighted in an OPB article. New public health care for 100,000 Oregonians would raise private insurance costs. And they didn't say it, but I'll say it for everyone else. So let me just read the first three paragraphs here. A new publicly funded insurance plan is headed toward the final step it needs for state approval in spite of concerns about the impact it will have on Oregon's health insurance marketplace for individuals and small businesses. The idea for the new insurance program is to be a lot like the Oregon Health Plan, Oregon's version of Medicaid. Free health care provided by coordinated care organizations with no co-pays, monthly premiums, or out-of-pocket expenses. It will cover people who earn between 138% to 200% of the federal poverty level. That's too much to qualify for the Oregon Health Plan, but too little to easily afford private health insurance. A single person would qualify with an income between $20,000 and $29,000. The Oregon Health Authority estimates 100,000 people will qualify for the new plan, which is called a Basic Health Program, or BHP. The program is a rarely used feature of the Affordable Care Act and is primarily paid for with federal dollars that otherwise goes to subsidize their marketplace plans. But it comes with a downside. Oregon Health Authority expects that launching the program will drive up the monthly cost of health care for many people who buy insurance from the individual and small business marketplace, healthcare.gov. So let's pause there for a bit to get your take on this. I mean, the article goes on to talk about the impact on people who already have insurance, but we'll come back around to that. But what do you make of this idea? Is it a good idea or a bad idea? And my question of looking at that is, if it's only going to cover 100,000 people, why not just expand the current plan rather than do a whole new one?
Correct. So that's always been my kind of thought process, is that before we go to start something brand new, right, it's going to cost money. It's going to cost the investigation. I mean, you're not even talking about what it costs when the legislature says, hey, go and do a study on this. We spend money on that, by the way. Mm-hmm. So you're spending money to create a program that may or may not work. Do you need it, right? Are you recreating the wheel for no reason? Because, again, as we were kind of at the end of the last segment, if you don't qualify for Medicaid based upon the Affordable Care Act and the premium subsidies, they slowly bring you into paying a portion of your premium. So you can qualify. I'll give you an example. If I have an individual who's at 150% of the poverty mark, they're not supposed to be paying more than 2% of their gross income. So, my chart says they're not going to spend more than $34 a month on their premium for a silver plan, right? I mean, they can pay more. They can go to a richer benefit plan. But if they stick with the way the government designed it, that's to give your folks an idea. It's not that we're saying, hey, you're not on Medicaid anymore, you got to pay full price. These people can still, again, it's going to go slowly up based upon their income percentage. They're going to pay a small piece of the premium, and as they do better financially, it'll ratchet up. And there's also, I didn't even talk about the fact that not only are we using tax dollars to help with premiums, which I'm supportive of. If you're struggling, I want people to have health coverage. I want there to be a path. But in addition, for those folks that are up to 250% of the poverty mark, not only are they eligible based upon their age and their income and the premiums to get these subsidies, they're also eligible to have what we call cost-sharing reduction, which means when they buy a silver plan, that's kind of a terminology in our market, there's gold, silver, and bronze, the deductibles, the out-of-pocket maximums, the copays are reduced pro rata based upon their income. So the lower the income, the lower the deductibles and out-of-pocket. The problem is people don't understand this. It's not explained well. And so they just assume, oh, I've got to pay this huge price for the premium and these out-of-pocket. And they don't understand there's a program there to ease them into this based upon where they're at. So my question to the Oregon legislature is, why? Why are you creating another program that is going to take those people that fall between 138 to 200 who would get substantial subsidies and substantial cost-sharing reductions? Why are you taking them out of the market where they should be and putting them basically into Medicaid? And in the meantime that you're doing that, those folks, I mean, they're estimating that out of those 100,000, they've estimated 55,000 are going to come from people that are coming off of OHP. So they'll come off of OHP and go to this basic health plan. Another 35,000, they think, are going to come from the people that are already enrolled on the marketplace. And then another 10,000 they've come up with. I don't know where they got that number. When the carriers, such as Kaiser and Regents Blue Cross, which is Cambia here in our state, are saying, look, this is going to disrupt the market. This will drive up premiums for everybody else. Why they're saying that is when they're selling plans, right, it's all numbers. So the more people you have, the more you can spread the risk of the claims coming in. If you significantly decrease the amount of people on the market, then the people that are left, and as those claims come in, there's not as many places to spread the risk. So in fact, your premiums go up. Because premiums are not just some guy smoking a cigar throwing a dart at the ball. They have to go through immense calculations every year on who they have, who they expect to gain, what are they estimating the medical claims to be. That's based on their negotiations with the providers, all kinds of stuff. And as we get more and more sophisticated medical services and technologies, that price goes up. So again, the carriers need a lot of people because the more people they have, the more they can spread the risk.
Right.
They can keep those premiums stable. If we go and take what effectively the carriers are expecting 55,000 people to come back into their market with subsidies, and then you're going to take on top of that 35,000 out of who they have now, and there's only 142,000 people on the market right now enrolled in these individual plans, think about it. You're significantly shifting the numbers, and the carriers are being honest. They're like, hey, folks, this isn't going to be good. The only two carriers that were in support of this, by the way, was Cover Oregon, which is basically a Medicaid provider, and they also sell Medicare / Medicaid plans. That's all they do. And then Pacific Source, great company, but they're heavily involved in providing services to the Medicaid population.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ones that are. Yeah, it's kind of like the ones that are in favor of this are the ones that stand to benefit from it. So big surprise there. All right, coming back, we're going to be talking some more about those premiums going up. We're doing that with Lisa Lettmeyer. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about all the problems that are going on in the healthcare system, including the massive amount of money that we're spending. We're doing that with Lisa Lettmeyer. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. You can find out more by heading to healthsourcenw.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And so, Lisa, we were talking about this article. It was from OPB. The title of it, again, is New Public Healthcare for 100,000 Oregonians Would Raise Private Insurance Costs. And so let's focus on this notion about the premiums going up. I'd like to just read this from that article. This is from Cambia, and they said they used the example of a family of two adults making $78,880 a year. That's 400% of the federal poverty level, but they could see their premiums increase by $4,800 a year under this new plan. You know, and then the article went on to say, essentially, many more poor people in Oregon will have stable, publicly funded health care. But it comes at the cost of some middle-class Oregonians paying more for private health insurance each month. Basically, I think we're punishing people who are doing the right thing. And you mentioned all these people coming off out of the private insurance because of this new plan and how that's going to spread all the costs against those that are still there.
Correct. Yeah. And again, you know, the article even says it gives our low-income people more stability. I'm not opposed to putting in programs within any society where you help support people who have found themselves struggling. And it could be temporary, it could be ongoing, maybe they have a disability or a mental health condition. But we do have to be super clear on the rules, and we have to always, always, always have a path to help support that person and to show them a path to slowly come off of it. Not take it away immediately, right as soon as they make $50 more a month, but to slowly bring them off so that they can, you know, like the American dream, just kind of build up, right? Mm-hmm. But if you've created a situation where, well, if you're from here down, we give you all this stuff, but if you're $1 over, you're going to start paying a lot more. Guess what you're doing?
Yeah.
You're effectively keeping people in servitude to a government program. They don't, they can't. They can't want to do better because as soon as they do, as soon as they cross that arbitrary line that you've drawn with your government program, now there's no slow transition. You're just like, you either have everything you want, you know, we give you all these different programs, or you get nothing. And that's not realistic either. But we've got to constantly show people how to move forward, move up, and not rely on that forever. We also have to figure out how to keep people from getting those handouts when they don't need them. So I'm going to kind of quickly go back and kind of jump on you here. But remember what I said, to qualify for Medicaid or even these subsidies that the government's going to help pay your premium, you simply state your current month income, gross income, and your expected gross income for the following year or the remainder of the year, right? They're not asking about your assets. But here's the challenge. So number one, you should always be asking about that, right? Because we could actually have, I know people, quite frankly, who have come through my agency who I know because they got sent to me by a financial advisor that they're doing fine. Like they wouldn't even be working with a financial advisor unless they had something to work with.
Right.
So if those people are qualifying for subsidies, we've got a problem, number one. Number two, what's even more egregious is when I'm transitioning somebody from a health insurance plan where they're getting subsidies onto Medicare, and as soon as they turn 65, you no longer qualify for any subsidies, period. And to qualify for any kind of financial assistance for your medical costs, at a minimum, they're already now asking not just your income, but your assets.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I could have an individual who turns 65, if their income is at or below $20,385 this year, or $20,385, that's the income side, so that or below. However, the secondary question is, do you have assets of $15,160 or more? That is cash assets. So your bank account, your savings, your 401k, your IRAs, your CDs. And there's not a lot of people, even if they're struggling financially, that may not have been at an employer where they were able to put money away, right? So the ability to basically not qualify for any assistance at age 65 is pretty large because most people have at least something in a 401k that they may have not have even looked at their whole working life. So why is it so difficult to assist our elderly, but yet it's so easy to give out handouts under 65 and not even ask about the asset side? That should be the question.
Yeah, it should be. But, you know, it's government. They're not good at asking the right questions, and they're not good at doing the right things either.
Here we are, creating a new program with more money when we have a path for these people to slowly bring them off of Medicaid and slowly bring them into a health plan. But yet Oregon's going to say no, and they're going to spend more money to create another program, and is it necessary?
Yeah. Well, it's so typical of government to be reckless with people's money, especially if you create a colossal billion-dollar boondoggle and you know that personally you're not ever going to be responsible for anything. In fact, you'll probably get promoted up the ladder because, hey, you were in charge of this billion-dollar program rather than just actually, you know, maybe finding a way to save government $1 billion. Those are the people that need to be promoted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking about, you know, you qualify for Medicaid if you're at or below 138%. That's for adults and families. Let me give you a couple of other programs that are out there, which, again, good programs. If you're a pregnant woman, pregnant women and children can make up to 185% and still remain on OHP. So this is before we go to the basic health plan. Children under the age of 19 with a household income, their family's household income, can remain on OHP or Medicaid up through 305% of the household, you know, the 305% of the poverty level. So kids are already predominantly kept on OHP, certainly if their family is at or below 305% or you know, below. If you have breast cancer or cervical cancer, there's a program that helps women with facing that stay on OHP up to 250% of the poverty mark. If you're a youth with special needs between the ages of 19 and 26 and your household income is $300,000 or less, you're going to be remaining on Medicaid. And quite frankly, those special needs kids, as they're going through that transition, once they turn 19, some way, usually they'll qualify for Medicare during that span. They'll get it through their parents. So we're taking care of big chunks of people that need that assistance. So again, we need to keep adding to it.
Yeah, really. It's just an infinite number of programs. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll wrap things up with Lisa Lettmeyer after this. And welcome back in our final segment now with Lisa Lettmeyer. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. You can find out more by heading to healthsourcenw.com. She specializes in navigating the complexities of the health insurance market for individuals. And so, Lisa, in the time that we have left, I'd like to talk to you about a fairly new development. This is doctors at Providence St. Vincent are looking to join a union. This after their counterparts in Medford have already joined the Pacific Northwest Hospital Medicine Association, and a majority of doctors in Portland have signed union authorization cards. In part, this is due, they say, or at least in large part, because the doctors are forced to accept more and more patients. Also, more and more doctors are being forced into consolidation and away from smaller family care environments, and because they have to deal with more rules and more legal requirements, heavy-handed taxes, fees, red tape, and legal impositions imposed by the government. And I just don't see a bunch of doctors joining a union is going to make things better or certainly less expensive.
No, probably not less expensive, possibly better for the doctors. I mean, I read the same article. It's no different than I've read articles or talked to nurses. We don't have in this country, we don't have enough primary care doctors or nurses. Certainly in this state, the numbers are really, really bad. We don't have, when they say we don't have enough beds per capita in our state, we're at like the lowest level. It's not because they don't have a physical bed or room. It's because they don't have the doctors and nurses to support those beds. And Oregon's done it to themselves. They've made it difficult for people to come into our state and bring in their licenses. I think there's some talk about changing that now. During COVID, you know, people were pushed to their limits. And I actually have somebody I know who was a nurse, and she quit and became a traveling nurse. And she said, it's amazing. I make anywhere from 2 to 3 times what I was making before. I have, you know, 2 or 3 month little cycles that I'm on, and I don't have to go to any of the meetings and all the protocols. I just come in, punch a clock, show up, and do my nursing duties, and I leave. And I get paid more with less stress. And when the doctors are talking about all this extra rules and regulations, understand that at least, and again, this is just my personal opinion from talking to lots of people with what I do for a living, I've helped many healthcare providers, nurses transition into Medicare as they retired. And it's a constant theme that they're overworked. They're asked to handle more clients than they really should be. They're asking to do long hours. And also with all of the inclusion, especially with whether it be Medicaid, Medicare, or the Affordable Care Act, in that is buried all this extra work, administrative work, checking a box, asking questions. There's all this data collection on us as patients as we walk in the door. If you've noticed that in the last couple of years, several years, there's a lot more questions that they ask you, and some of them aren't about your health, right? So there's all this data collection. I've had numerous doctors, primary care doctors, tell me that they easily spend a third of their day just on paperwork. So if you've got it kind of odd that you're sitting there talking to your doctor and they're not looking at you because they're typing, or they want to look at you, so they hire a person to follow them around with a little tray to type for them, or they're old school, they don't do any of that, so they have to spend a third of their day at the end of the night writing up all these reports.
And so how accurate is all that going to be? So it's really interesting to hear you talk, because that's kind of where I was going, is that the government is imposing more rules and regulations and more taxes and pulling all the levers that is going to make this more time-consuming and drive up costs for doctors. This is the same government that's paying for the health care that they are helping to make more expensive. I mean, this is like how black holes form.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, one of the things, again, that I'm always quirky. I kind of zero in on certain things. But one of the things in the Affordable Care Act, and I've asked plenty of doctors about this because I thought it was weird, we went from, I don't know, somewhere in the area of 30,000, 40,000 diagnoses and billing codes, right, before the Affordable Care Act. And then it ballooned in the Affordable Care Act to somewhere like 3 times as many diagnosis and billing codes. And I've asked doctors, and I'm like, back in the day, if there was a dog bite, you said it was a dog bite. Now you have to say what body part, what type of dog. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And I've asked them why, and they're like, we don't know. They're asking for all this extra detail, and we don't know what it's doing for us. It's not, you know, it's just data collection. But remember, as that happens, if the doctors don't do what they're asked to do and fill out extra forms and check extra boxes, they don't get paid or get paid to the full amount.
Right.
So everything has a repercussion, everything.
The astounding part of all of this, as we've talked throughout this whole show, is just the tidal wave of spending that we're doing. But when you look back at how all of this started, it was because, and how this was pushed nationally with Obamacare, but certainly here within the state, was that this was going to help us save money. It was going to save money if we did this. And I don't think we're anywhere near saving anything.
No, as a closing comment, we are apparently at an all-time high in the U.S. Our current spending for 2021 came in at $4.3 trillion. When they look at the numbers on healthcare, just on healthcare in 2021, and kind of consistently, about 20% of the population makes up the bulk of that. About 85% of what we spend is coming from 20% of the population. We need to just be managing and figuring out ways to help that part of the population, and also making us not so lazy.
Yeah.
We have drug advertising. We don't want to talk about tort reform. We just want to be who we are and then push some easy button and expect everything to be wonderful.
And it just doesn't
work. That's not
how
life works.
No, it sure isn't.
Nope, sure doesn't.
Nope. Lisa, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today. It's been really informative.
Thank you. And again, thanks for having me back. I love being on your show, and I love what you guys do for our organs.
Well, thank you very much. So, now that you're angry or depressed or confused or all of the above after hearing about what a mess Oregon has made of its healthcare system while spending colossal amounts of your hard-earned money, we don't want to leave you on that note. So what can you do? First, stop being silent. You have to make this part of your routine now. Did you know that when the state was pushing this new basic health plan, which sounds suspiciously like the other left's buzz phrase, universal basic income, did you know that only 41 members of the public submitted comments about that plan? And most of those came from organizations, not from people. So be on the lookout for opportunities to comment on these kinds of issues. You don't need to be an expert. You just need to weigh in. And when you find or hear about opportunities for public comment, share it with your friends. Second, get informed on the issues. We always share the research that we do for a show on that week's show page. This week, it's 13-30. Scroll down the page to read through those. The point of iSpy Radio is to keep an eye on big government for you so you can be better informed. And don't forget to share what you learn and use it to talk to those who represent you in the legislatures. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The iSpy Radio Show.